Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
95 all. Jazz don't call a timeout. Joe Johnson comes to the front court. Gets a pick from Ingles. 7 seconds left. Tie game. Joe Johnson working Jamal Crawford. 3 seconds. 2-1 for the win. Yes! 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 Joe Johnson saves again!
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 24th of May.
Kyrie Irving is amazing. And does this mean he wants to follow Harden and Westbrook? We'll discuss. Plus, season in review for Joe Johnson and Trey Lyles. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope you're doing great today. Glad to have you aboard. Appreciate you tuning in to the program very much. And anyone who's left 5 stars on iTunes or whatever else, it's great. Our numbers continue to be good in the offseason, so I appreciate your loyalty staying with the program. Locked On NBA, I had Chuck Cooperstein on. I thought it was a fun conversation about if you were a commissioner, what would you change? I got into my officiating thing that I really believe in, a bunch of other little angles, and then we closed the conversation on a really interesting conversation, and that's where I want to start with us today before we get into the Joe Johnson and Trey Lyles season in review. So there's an interesting convergence of two different things that are taking place in the NBA right now. One of which is that you have the back-to-back MVPs in the league, or two of the last three, or whatever, are going to be James Harden, or the two MVPs we're talking about this year, James Harden and Russell Westbrook, both of which, in different manners, were parts of super teams or teams loaded with stars and became the sole star and then went on to change completely who they are and how they're thought of as a player in this league. So James Harden, in some ways, forced his way out of Oklahoma City so he could have his own team. That was part of the conversation. And the next aspect to it was that Russell Westbrook, indirectly, I would say, became a sole superstar when was left by Kevin Durant. And so both of them become single stars and become incredible. Now, if you're Kyrie Irving, who was just incredible last night, aren't you asking yourself, wait a sec, if I leave the Cavs, I've won my title. Maybe I'm going to get a second. I have my 3 trips to the finals. But all NBA, did we see, is Kyrie Irving mentioned in all NBA this year? And yet the guy I watched last night, certainly one of the best I've ever seen. So if, and he's not first team all NBA. So does that guy suddenly say, you know what? Like, that's enough. I want my own team. And I can't Chuck and I got into this discussion. But if I'm Kyrie Irving and I'm sitting there saying, well, wait a sec. So James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry, Isaiah Thomas, John Wall, DeMar DeRozan, Chris Paul all got more votes than I did for all NBA? Well, this is not, I'm not going down as one of the great players of all time in the history of the game at this rate. But if I leave, if I ask out, I'm 25 years old, and in my prime, I suddenly start dropping 35 a game, and I have a title, and I have 3 trips to the final. Now I suddenly start being thought of as one of the great players of all time. Right? Headline story, SB Nation right now. Kyrie Irving is the perfect sidekick for LeBron James. I'm Kyrie Irving. I'm like, I am no sidekick. At what point does Kyrie Irving decide, you know what? I don't want to be a sidekick anymore. And I think that's what gets really interesting with these super teams, if whatever you want to call it, is that we have these two kind of different aspects to what's going on in the league. You have, you know, no differently than the league's ever been. If you're going to win, you've got to have a collection of Hall of Fame players. If you're going to lose, if you're not, well, then you suddenly have, you know, if you want to establish yourself, your own greatness, well, we clearly told Steph Curry that being on a super team this year is not as important as being individually great like Harden or Russell Westbrook, because he didn't make first team All-NBA. Now, Kyrie's under contract, 18.8 this next year, 20 and 21, and they're great numbers, and as LeBron ages, he becomes more and more important. And so I can't imagine how Cleveland's ever going to let him go, but you wonder whether he might say something. Klay Thompson's a similar circumstance. Klay Thompson is not, you know, suddenly dropping down his status in the league. Should he be? Probably not. But he's $17 million this year, $18.9 next year. At some point in the time, does he say, you know what, I've had enough. I want my own team. I mean, I give up an awful lot for, you know, Kyrie Irving led team has not won, but you still have to believe it probably would at some point. But maybe not. I don't know. I think that's a real issue that's of two kind of divergent things that are taking place right now in the league. Chuck and I talked about it. Chuck disagrees with me. Chuck thinks, what more could you want than a chance to win a championship, be a part of it? I think guys want to establish their own personal legacy. And maybe I would want to too. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the best way for you to get tickets to any upcoming event. In fact, the Katy Perry tickets are now up on SeatGeek if you're local in Salt Lake. SeatGeek's an app on your phone, and all you have to do is download the app, then go to the settings tab and enter in the promo code LOJAZZ, and they'll send you a $20 rebate at your first event. Let's say you want to go see Lady Gaga December 14th. It's great. You go on the phone. It tells you the tickets start as low as $75. Then it does a search for you on the tickets. And the coolest part about it is, and actually they're lower than that. The coolest part about it is the fact that now they search for all of the tickets from all the different areas in one spot for you. And they give each ticket a ticket score. Right now, the best tickets are only a deal at a 60 deal point. Usually that can go up a lot higher. So maybe you set yourself a price alert on SeatGeek and say, hey, you know what? I want to know when there's four tickets that have a deal score or a price over this, and let me know. That's another feature that SeatGeek offers for you. It compiles all the tickets from all the different places. Then it gives every ticket a ticket score, making it much easier for you to understand the arena if you're going to be on the road. As I've said before, we have a daughter that's obsessed with Hamilton. We are failing desperately trying to find out when ticket prices will ever drop for Hamilton, but we're keeping an eye on it to see what might take place and where the seats are cheaper if you can get them. And I don't know anything about the private bank theater in Chicago that I'm looking at, but I do know that there's two tickets in row E that are getting a ticket score of 83, which is the best I've ever seen for Hamilton. And maybe we're going to end up buying them, and we'd use SeatGeek for it because it comes right back to our phone and is secured once it gets there. So go download the app SeatGeek, and the promo code is LOJAZZ. Go to the settings tab and do that now. All right, season in review for Joe Johnson. Joe Johnson, if I'm summarizing the season, is injuries forced him into an unexpected role that and a depth of roster forced him into an unexpected role. And then in the second half of the season, the Jazz used him as they intended, which was as the power forward. It was incredibly valuable. It gave the Jazz the spread team that I think Quinn had always desired. The Jazz did some really, really good things with Joe, and then obviously his coolness, his 35 years, his 15 years experience, and that presence was a vital aspect to winning playoff games, obviously, including the much talked about game one, which opened the show today. One thing I thought was interesting as I was previewing for this is we started playing exclusively as the power forward in the second half of the season, and our defensive rating with him at the power forward post All-Star break was not good. For as excited as we are about that, one thing we have not entirely answered yet is how we are going to play the spread floor and still be elite defensively. The defensive rating with Joe Johnson at the power forward post All-Star break was a 107.7. When Joe was on the floor with Derek Favors, it was less good than it was with Rudy. But as the All-Star, as the playoffs proceeded, this kind of perked up its head too. The offensive rating was great, so 109 was the number for the season. When the Jazz had that can't be right. Sorry, for the playoffs, this is right. And this is somewhat skewed by the Warriors. The defensive rating was a 114 when Rudy Gobert and Joe Johnson were on the floor. During the season when they were on the floor together, it was a 102, and so it looks very, very good. But if you go just post All-Star break, it's a 106. It's not the same elite defensive team that we've been. It's good, and it was plus 5.6 post All-Star break with Joe Johnson at the four. But it wasn't quite as much the killer group that I think we thought it was. The Clippers could not adjust to it until the final games of the playoffs, and I think that was part of it. Joe Johnson was very interesting in his post game locker clear out podium, talking about how tired everybody was, and Joe ended up shooting just 33%. From three in the playoffs. Some of those numbers slid as the series went on and as, you know, fatigue might have kicked in. The biggest number on Joe that was obvious this year is the more rest he had, the better he was. He was just terrific the more rest. He brought everything to this team. In the Warriors series, suddenly the paint where he was killing the Clippers, he went 29 of 45 in the paint against the Clippers, suddenly became 2 of 10. He finished before the final game when he went 2 of 8, so he finished 19 of his last 60 from the field. So the playoffs, he wore down a little bit, but he was everything the Jazz wanted. Best three-point average since 04-05. 41% of his field goal attempts were threes, which was a career high. Only 15% of his twos were assisted. 86% of his threes, so he's a catch-and-shoot guy, or he's working inside. And his late-game play was just remarkable. His 2 days or more rest, he shot 50% from the field and 50% from three, whereas on 1 day's rest, he shot 41% from the field. So pretty big difference. He is a deadly catch-and-shoot guy, unguarded catch-and-shoot. He was an effective field goal percentage of 70%. He was an open three-point shooter. If the defender was more than 4 feet away, he hit 44%. In post-All-Star break, inside 8 feet, he started to struggle a little bit, 44% when he had bigger guys on him, but then killed the Clippers with it. Better as the games went on, really was just terrific late and clutch. But there is, you know, this was part of the answer. He back next year with his contract. He's just a terrific asset to have on the team. Rob Mahoney just did a whole breakthrough podcast with him. I don't think it's called Break Something Podcast. I'll have to check. What's Rob Mahoney's podcast? With Joe, that's worth hearing. Was really well done. I missed it when it first came out. But that one is Breakaway Podcast is what it's called. So make sure you go grab that and take a listen to it. Joe talks about his career and the different aspects. And he brings he was an incredible signing. And to think back, by the way, the four players who were being talked about were Luol Deng, Jared Dudley, Solomon Hill, and Joe Johnson. And the Jazz ended up with Joe Johnson, who was the least expensive of the four. Really, this was probably Dennis Lindsay's finest move of the season, and it was, if I can reveal probably now, it was their primary target. You know, there were discussions with the other guys, but the Jazz primary and first stop was Joe Johnson. And he's back next year, has a tradable contract, I guess, but is back next year. And I would, you know, just brings such an incredible asset to the team. And also the fact that he seems to have enjoyed it in Utah has a value. The enigma of the season was probably Trey Lyles. Until you think about it. So Trey Lyles had a poor year. Right? I mean, I don't know what else there is to say. He finished year 7 of his last 43 from 3, 3 of his last 17. But two things happened to Trey Lyles this year that make me so I'm not particularly concerned about the season. And then one thing that probably has me concerned, and it's so easily fixable that I'm not concerned. So the first thing that happened to Trey Lyles is he had a good close of the season last year, and due to injuries got to play a lot. And now you have a guy who was the man in high school, obviously. Was Indiana, won the state title, Indiana State Player of the Year. Goes to Kentucky as a McDonald's All-American. Plays the most minutes on a loaded Kentucky team. Comes to the NBA, has his adjustment season, and then is ready to go kill it in his second year. And doesn't. It doesn't work that way. And his minutes go from 24 in November to 19 in December to 14 in January to 12 in February to 8 in March and to 6 in April. I mean, it's just a downward. And he's never in his life sat on the bench or played so few minutes. And let me tell you something. When you start looking at stints of 3 and 4 minutes, you're talking 3 and 4 possessions offensively. It's like when I've looked at some of the stuff Dante and tried to analyze Dante, and you start looking at an 11-minute game where you play 5 minutes on one side and 5 minutes on the other, you're in the game for like 3 possessions offensively. And you're trying to figure out how you're going to prove yourself. And Trey's answer was to shoot, and probably too much so. So the one thing that concerned me is that I thought that Trey Lyles disengaged to the season in the midst of these struggles. Okay, so that's not great. It's also not surprising. It's not anything, it's a criticism, but it's not anything that would make me say, you know what, I don't believe in him in the future. I think he's guilty of disengaging. I think he almost said it at the podium in the locker clear out when he talked about the difficulty of the season. And it will be curious to see how he works and what his attitude is coming back next year. Because I do think that, you know, this was not a great year. But I also think I kind of get it. Like, he's a human being. He's 21 years old. He's dealing with failure or struggle for the first time in his basketball career. He thinks he's going to be riding high. He thinks he should be an all-star. And maybe he will be. Maybe he won't. But, I mean, we finished last year, and we think he was going to average like 16-6. And it doesn't happen. I have said this before. I think the telling night of the year was, I believe it was January 16th in Phoenix. Devin Booker, who's like one of his best friends from college, plays 46 minutes against us, takes 22 shots, has 25 points. And Trey Lyles plays 6 minutes that night, doesn't get a shot, wasn't good. And I think almost maybe an embarrassed is probably the wrong word, but I thought that's when he disengaged. He looked over at his buddy who he thinks is similar, who he's, you know, pick before, and he's getting 22 shots a night and free reign and no responsibility, and if he screws up, nobody cares. And here he's playing on a team that's going to win 50-plus games, and it's a lot harder. So I didn't love the way he disengaged, but I get it. And it's not one that's going to let me, you know, he's 21 years old. He's probably still, you know, he should be a junior in college. And there's probably some maturity elements there that are just reasonable to any 21-year-old. Now, to his game, there were some pretty dramatic changes in his game, and I think we better make sure it's the right way to use him. He went from taking 29% of his shots as threes to 47% of his shots as threes. That's crazy. He became so, I mean, half his shots were threes last year. I got the idea of a stretch four, but this guy's got a lot more skills than that. And I got the idea of losing some of the mid-range stuff, but it also might be why, you know, some of his shooting fell off. He went from 38% as a three-point shooter to 32. He went from taking three threes per 36 minutes to six threes per 36 minutes. That may be too much. He only shot 36%. There's some point you got to see the ball go through the basket, whether it's getting to the rim. His percentage of field goal attempts at the rim went from 24% to 18%. I mean, I do like the fact that he got rid of some of his mid-range shots, but he did hit in 42% or 41% is what he hit on those the year before. It's not great, but it's at least comfortable shots in the mid-range where he knows he can make a basket. The other one, the percentage of his assisted mid-shots last year for twos were 56%. This year, or 59%, they went down to 40. So somehow his usage really changed. In which he suddenly wasn't getting looks off other people, a lot of pump fake in his own pull-up stuff, and he became almost an exclusively three-point shooter. And I think there's a middle range in there that the Jazz have got to figure out with him. And he's a good ball handler. Got to let him play with the ball in his hands a little bit to figure out. Now, his assists per 100 possessions went up, and per 36 minutes was a good sign. His steals and his blocks went up. I just think this was the ultimate sophomore slump, struggles for the first time in his career. The skill level, the talent is still there in its entirety, and I think a very important piece moving forward. You know, a very important piece for the Jazz moving forward. With the if you re-sign Gordon and you sign George, you just don't have a lot of money. You're going to have some guys on rookie contracts contributing, and he is going to be a primary one of them. So we'll be interested to see how he deals with the offseason. Be interested to see how he dealt with the locker clear. Is he disengaged with the franchise because of the struggles? Does he fight harder? We learn a lot from Trey Lyles in this offseason. I'm not discouraged in any way about what I saw this year, as disappointing as his season might have been, because of simply the circumstances, the reality, and how hard it is for young players to play on good teams. Right? So if you go look at the draft of that season or other seasons, you know, the players that are having big time success or big, you know, there aren't any guys who are being particularly good on good teams. Miles Turner has probably been the best of anyone on a good team. But when you talk about, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns is yet to be on a good team. Kristaps Porzingis, that team's not been good yet. Willie Cauley-Stein, that team's not good yet. Larry Nance Jr., that team's not good yet. Frank Kaminsky has been okay, but he hasn't been great. So you start running down those players that have had success of that draft class, and you don't have a lot of guys, you know, that have. Sam Decker has been playing on Houston, who's a really good team. He's been oft injured, but he hasn't had a lot of time. Kelly Oubre is having a hard time finding his mix inside Washington because that's a good team. And so you look through the guys that were drafted and are playing on good teams. Now, it's very rare that you have a player as good as Trey Lyles drafted in a pick on a team that's as good as the Jazz that was picked at 12, because very rarely the teams make the jumps that the Jazz have. And so it's a difficult circumstance for Trey Lyles. That is today's edition of Locked On Jazz. SeatGeek is the sponsor. LO Jazz is the promo code. So please make sure you go support our sponsors, and feel free to grab Locked On NBA with Chuck Cooperstein today as well. This has been Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.